When did you first become interested in bounce?
I guess, I've been listening to it since I lived in New Orleans. I've been here since 95 when I came down to start at Tulane, but I didn't start doing any serious, research on it, I guess, until, I started writing about it more after the hurricane, because I was the music critic for the Gambit, and I started seeing the whole Big Frida, Sissy Nobe phenomenon. So I wrote a cover story about that, and then, I started getting more emails from rappers, so I knew when events were happening. So I started trying to cover it more, because there wasn't a lot of coverage going on about the local rap scene after the storm, and then Aubrey Edwards, the photographer, contacted me about working with her photo documentary. When I really started filling in all the gaps and stuff, try to fill in the narrative of the whole music history, as sort of more than just a casual fan.
Tying everything together, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember the first bounce show you went to?
Yeah, actually the first bounce show I went to was, I forget if it was 98 or 99, but Quintron had Katie Redd perform at his house. That was right around when she had put out her first album, so that was the first time I ever went and saw a bounce show. Because also in the late 90s, maybe people that lived here had more access to where it was actually happening in the clubs, but there was no MySpace or Twitter or Facebook or anything. And you didn't hear a lot about just the more street-level stuff on the radio, so I think I wouldn't have known.
When did you decide to turn this into a full-blown project?
Aubrey had gone back and forth to New Orleans a lot over the years, because her sister lived here, which, it turned out after she found me that I had known her sister really well. We just didn't know each other, which is,
right.
How small New Orleans
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Nola, for sure, yeah.
But, so she wanted to do this photo essay about bounce rappers. She wanted to find someone local that could tell her, she had her, she had a CD that an ex-boyfriend had given her that was a bounce mixtape that made her interested in doing it. So she was looking for, a local person to just be a guide to flesh out the scene for her and just make a list of, anybody that she should photograph. And so, I made my list. I had maybe 8 or 10 rappers that I had phone numbers for, who had been doing stuff recently that I knew how to contact. And then I had everybody that I had an old record or a CD or had, stolen some tracks off the internet. So I just made a big list of everyone that I thought would be important in trying to document the bounce scene. And then it just came together. We just talked a lot about the best way to do it. And she wanted to do this portraiture and also do these candid shots to show, because it's a really dynamic scene, so you don't want to just have static portraits of everyone, although that's more the artistic part that she would talk about more, but I wanted to add the actual, the first person voices, to actually have audio of the rappers and the label people and the DJs just telling their own stories, so.
That turns it into a more historical, archival project. It becomes more with the audio.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the things I'm really proud of that we managed to do is include all this audio and this music, and especially and we have a lot of records and tapes and flyers that we had a couple of photographers and journalists who were in the community and on the scene in the 90s worked with us to bring that stuff in, because otherwise if it had just been us jumping in to take pictures of them in 2009 and 2010, you just wouldn't have gotten the story. You would have gotten pictures of musicians and really had no idea why.
This tracks the roots of a style of music.
Yeah, that's definitely what we tried to do. And also without putting their voices in there, it would have just been, I've lived here for 15 years, but I'm not from here, so it would have been this outsider from New York City coming in and this is bounce music. Kind of not the person I wanted to be. In the time I've been here and the time I've been doing music writing, it's such a weird line. It's everyone's so fascinated with this really street level culture, and then the people who have the tools and the resources to document it are very often not from that culture, and there's this weird, it's just kind of a weird thing. It's like you have to be very careful to not be disrespectful. What we were trying to do, which I hope that we succeeded.
Who was the first person you talked to for the project?
I think it might have been Miss T, she is a female rapper who has kind of an R&B style to her sound, and she was the first woman that was ever signed to Cash Money when she was a teenager. And I had her number because she had done her first jazz fest in 2007, maybe. So I talked to her for that. So she was one of the people that I just called up and was like, hey, like, can we come take a picture of you to put it in a museum?
Uh-huh.
I think she might have been it. I had also, like, in the beginning, I used some old interviews I had with Katie Redd and with DJ Jubilee. So I'm not sure who was exactly the first. I think she might have been the first that we shot specifically for this project.
Do you have a favorite interview you did for the project?
There were some good ones. I think one of my favorites has to be Greg C.
Uh-huh.
Because we just talked for, like, that was the longest interview I did. And we talked for, like, 2.5 hours, and he just cuts up. Like, he's really energetic and laughs a lot and gossips. And he was a rapper with the Ninja Crew, which was, like, a really early 90s, like, hip-hop crew from Uptown. And he did a record with Manny Fresh, like, as Gregory D and Manny Fresh, before Manny started working for Cash Money.
Mm-hmm.
So he had really good perspective on kind of the pre-bounce scene. How hip-hop kind of got, I don't want to say it got kind of subsumed into the bounce movement, but he was just there kind of right when bounce exploded. So, yeah, I mean, he was really good.
What was your craziest moment during the project?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazier than, it's funny because I've done a lot of, most of like the oral history style work that I've done in the past has been for the Ponderosa Stomp, which
mm-hmm.
is all roots music.
Mm-hmm. Right,
so you do
right.
interviews
awesome.
With people
awesome.
Who are, they're like 70s, so they're very calm, and there's not as much craziness that happens. Like working with people who are my age, pretty much, or like a little bit older, is, I mean, I guess by definition, like a little nuttier, because they haven't calmed down yet.
Right.
Or they haven't been interviewed by 50 million people yet. But, I mean, the craziest moment, hands down, was when we were interviewing Precise, who was one of Juvenile's like earliest producers, and he also produced Mystical, and
mm-hmm.
he owned or he co-owned a couple of the early New Orleans rap labels, and we were interviewing him out in Araby.
Uh-huh.
And it was a little house that I guess a friend of Juvenile's was letting them use as a studio. So Juvenile was there and Precise was there. And I was in the back room with him recording the interview. And then all of a sudden, and I have this on tape, too. Like, you hear, like, bang, bang, bang on the door. And it was the St. Bernard Parish Sheriff's Office. And they just sit in. And they apparently had had a neighbor had called in a complaint saying that the house smelled like pot.
Uh-huh.
Which, like, I didn't think it smelled like pot. I don't actually even smoke pot, so I feel like I would have noticed. Except that I smoke cigarettes, so my sense of smell isn't amazing. But nobody was smoking pot at the time, I can definitely say that. So they actually handcuffed all of us, like me and Aubrey and Juvenile and Precise and
God.
their DJ. And this, like, neighborhood kid who ran errands for them. And we all got handcuffed, and we all had to, like, sit on the couch for, like, 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
They had, like, I think it was only, like, 3 cops at the beginning. And, like, Aubrey and I counted, and by the end they had 14 cops, like, through the house and talked to everyone. And, like, in the end, I mean, and this was in the paper, Juvenile was like, look, I have some pot in the kitchen drawer, and it's my pot, and I'm sorry, like, this is my house.
Right, yeah.
And it was a tiny amount of pot. It was like a quarter ounce or something. So they eventually let everybody else go, and they took him to jail, and he was in jail for like 2 years. I think it was a misdemeanor. I'm not totally sure. He paid a fine. He got out.
Mm-hmm.
But that was somewhat frightening, because I had not ever been handcuffed before. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, especially when you're just trying to interview somebody, and then something like that going down. You know, that's ridiculous.
No, it was totally bizarre.
Yeah,
like, I was just sitting there like, so you can really just call the cops and say that your neighbor's house smells like pot, and all of this will happen. It seemed wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Only in NOLA, I guess, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And they didn't really ask anyone to explain themselves at all. Like,
mm-hmm.
they weren't like, why are you here? What's going on here? Like, they didn't realize it was Juvenile for a while, and then
mm-hmm.
when they did realize it was him, everybody got kind of starstruck, and they were like, "Well, can we take our picture with you?"
he's like, "I mean, how do you respond to that?"
He's just like, I mean, he was actually very polite. Like, mm-hmm. he was irritated at first, and then
well, yeah,
like then he kind of, I think then he just chilled out. Like, they were, and they were all kind of being fans.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah, you can take a picture of me, like, if you take my handcuffs off for the picture.
Right.
And they were asking, he had this diamond necklace on, and they were like, did the necklace cost? Like, how many copies of 400 Degrees did you sell? And
God, that's crazy, man. I mean, yeah, yeah. That's nuts for sure. I mean,
Oh, and, like, I had identified myself as, I think maybe Aubrey said it, too, because they really did not ask, like, who are you, why are you here, to anybody. And I write for the Times-Picayune a lot.
Right,
so
yeah,
like,
you do.
So
yeah.
I was like, hey, like, I'm, you know, I'm a writer for the Times-Picayune, I'm with the press. And they were like, do you have your press ID? And I was like, no, actually, I don't. I'm a freelancer. And they were like, okay. And they didn't say anything else. But I guess they had called it in for the newsroom, listens on the police band radio. So as soon as they let us go, like, I called the official music writer at the Times-Picayune, and I was like, hey, just to let you know, like, I gave your name as a reference to say that I actually do work for the Times-Picayune because I just, like, almost got arrested. And he was like, oh, I know all about it.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So, like, the whole newsroom had been laughing at me for, like, an hour. Come in over the radio.
Are you planning on doing this exhibit other places?
Yeah, we've been looking for another venue. Like, we didn't have one in place for when the exhibit at the Ogden closes, which is, I think, July 31st. So we're kind of, I guess right now we're waiting for the next cycle of grant deadlines to come around, and we're going to apply some other round of grants. There's a lot of people that were on the initial list that we didn't get to that we have more leads on now. We're going to try to add some people, and Aubrey has a friend in Washington, D.C. that might want to host it, and Ben has a friend in L.A. that was looking for galleries that might want to put it up, and the Ogden curator had been saying that he might want to help travel it too, so we definitely want to keep it going.
It seems like Bounce is really blowing back up now. Don't you think this could go national? I mean, again?
Yeah, I hope so. I think there's been, like, a big revival in New Orleans lately, and there's been kind of a crossover into, I guess, like the hipster dance music scene that wasn't there in the 90s during, like, the whole first wave of Bounce.
Yeah.
Which probably has a lot to do with the internet.
Almost any Bounce song you could want is on YouTube. You know?
Yeah, and there's a lot of blogs. I mean, like, I hate to say that I steal music off the internet, but I do. Like, there's a lot of blogs that post old New Orleans rap songs for download, and a lot of them are just stuff that you could never buy.
Even if you wanted to buy it, you couldn't buy it.
Yeah. So all these records got put out in such small pressings. They were, like, a lot of them, especially the early stuff, were sort of mom-and-pop labels or kind of just some dude that had a little bit of money and decided he was going to have a record label, and they'd put out 500 copies of a tape. Very hard to find.
So cool to see some so street level like that blowing up.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that, like, people like Big Frida or Partners in Crime and some of the, like, original artists that are still doing stuff today, like, I hope that they kind of keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
Some interest back in the old stuff, too.
The thing that's so neat about Bounce 2 is it's so New Orleans in its own way.
Yeah, and there's a lot of connections to, like, older sort of street-level New Orleans music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people fan brass bands, and a lot of people use Mardi Gras Indian melodies or Mardi Gras Indian chants kind of woven into it. And I mean, lots of rap music, like, is very referential to neighborhoods and stuff like that, but I feel like New Orleans sounds is especially so. So you get these weird little kind of tour guides to different neighborhoods just by listening to the songs.
Nola Bounce, it's like hyper-local.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's almost like nobody cared if anybody outside of Louisiana listened to it.
What are some of your favorite other scenes to cover besides the Bounce scene?
I haven't only been, like, seriously getting into the, like, New Orleans rap scene in the past couple of years. Like, as in terms of, like, writing about it seriously. So, and, like, being a music writer in New Orleans is kind of a unique job because you don't necessarily have to stay on top of what's going on in the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm, right. NOLA bands just do their own thing. You know that, like, even though other things are going on, it's like, look, Rebirth's going to be at the Leaf every Tuesday, and that's what's going to happen.
It's like a world unto itself. So, like, working with Ponderous Sounds, like, I get into a lot of old stuff, old R&B and funk and, like, garage from Louisiana. And then there's also, like, I love the New Orleans rock scene, as small as it is. like the Happy Talk Band and mm-hmm. Show and Alex McMurray and all those groups.
It does seem like the indie scene is blowing up. I mean, my God, look at Faubourg, man. That was a trip. That's exactly the kind of stuff that should happen.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's like the New Orleans indie rock scene is such like well-organized people. Before the storm, I kind of would laugh. I'd be like, oh, this indie rock collective people, they're working so hard and they have like two bands, but they're so proud. In the past couple years, like they really have a thing. Like they've got Park the Van.
Right.
Moving down here, and they've had Faubourg and this whole like explosion of new bands.
Givers playing Lala, John Michael playing Lala. I mean, like they're getting on major bills now.
Yeah, definitely. There was a big presence at South by Southwest this year that was like all New Orleans indie rock stuff, probably more than there was traditional stuff this year. Okay. Yeah, and then in Lafayette, they kind of have a scene too, like a rock scene, which I had never noticed until the past couple years, like Brass Band, Giant Cloud. I think they're from Lafayette.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're good. Who do you think is going to be the first band to really break through from the NOLA indie scene?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, My Name is John Michael is doing really well, mm-hmm. and they're really good. Generationals are also, like, having a pretty solid year.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too. Was South by Totally Insane? I mean, between, like, all the NOLA indie rock people and the Bounce Showcase, it was like a NOLA invasion.
Well, we got to see, like, my husband and I were doing the Bounce Showcase, and we had, like the South by Southwest schedules are so crazy. So between like everyone that was helping us work on it, we had like 7 bounce artists and we had like 6 gigs in 5 days. So kind of hard to see anything else. And then Alex Chilton passed away.
Right.
And he had been scheduled to play. So like I like had to file a couple stories for the Times Picayune, because also Keith Spira, so the main music writer at the Picayune, his baby had mm-hmm. arrived early, so he wasn't able to cover Alex.
Oh, man.
It was all kind of insane. I felt a lot of Louisiana presence there. Like, I mean, there were so many people we knew that were there, and they all tried to get down shows, and, like, we managed to get to the Generational show and a couple other things.
Did South by really react well to Bounce?
Yeah, and we got treated really well, too, by their hip-hop booker is a Houston hip-hop guy. So
okay.
He's very tuned in to, like, Southern rap, and he used to write for Murder Dog, and he's been into it forever. So he was really supportive from the beginning. But we got a lot of crap, which I think was kind of unusual. We got a couple of Austin Chronicle stories and like an American Statesman story, and we were in the South by South World magazine, and Katie Redd even, she was in the print wrap up in the New York Times, like for the whole festival, actually get mentioned by name in that, like, so that was pretty cool for her.
You see this new wave of bounce artists really being able to break out nationally?
I hope so. I mean, I think it's happening a little bit. Like Big Frida just got signed to a good booking agency, and she's got some good gigs coming up over the summer. And like I said, I think it is this kind of underground dance music scene that's really getting into it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if anybody's going to wind up like on the hip hop charts, but like mm-hmm. in terms of like the sort of like punk rock cool whistle scene,
uh-huh.
like that there's like major like crossover traction happening for people like Katie and Frida, and honestly, Partners in Crime are like doing really well just in the rap. Like straight up rap world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've been
yeah.
around since like 93, and they just keep going.
So a few weeks ago, and they were kicking some ass live. It was them, and like who was it? It's PNC and someone else played with them. Big Rock. Having Big Rock back them up, it's just like that's a great idea. You know?
Yeah, they did that. They actually did that for the first time at South by Southwest, that combination. And I think it was actually supposed to be My Name is John Michael with PNC, which, like, I actually would have been, like, I was disappointed that My Name is John Michael couldn't do it because they had a conflicting gig just because they have horns sometimes, and that would have been really awesome. Mm-hmm. The Big Rock thing worked out good.
Well, Voodoo's ago, Juvie, and he had someone with him. Shorty was playing with him, Trombone Shorty.
They do really well together.
Yeah, they do. And, like, it bridges these styles. Because it's all New Orleans shit.
It explains the connection, too. It's like, the whole New Orleans, like, music media for a long time never covered the fact that New Orleans rap comes out of all the same traditions as other New Orleans music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like Juvenile and Trombone Shorty didn't know each other, like, anyway.
Right.
And hang out. And, like, it's not like Juvenile doesn't listen to brass band music and funk.
Right.
But people always kind of pigeonhole them in these very separate categories. So doing the shows together sort of helps explain that it all comes from the same root.
That it's all from the same real place that makes great music in New Orleans. They're, like, bounce artists and bands you'd like to see paired up.
Yeah, I'd like to see, have you ever seen Vaca Redo?
No, I haven't.
Vaca's kind of like a little more out there. Like, he was sort of straight up bounce in the 90s, and he's gotten more and more theatrical, and he's got all these dancers and costumes, and I'd really like to see him with like a good funk band.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe with some other local funk band that's a little weird, like Edgar Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
Although they're not that, when they're brassy, I guess they're not super funky. But I'd like to see him with just some kind of crazy rock band, like MC Tracheotomy or...
Yeah. That'd be cool for sure. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I think there are so many good ideas that can just be fleshed out, just 'cause it is such a tight-knit community.